Hi everyone, and welcome to our ASM to FASM podcast. This time we'll be talking about CV writing and interview skills and what all that entails. I'm joined by Dr. Andy Underhill, who's an emergency consultant and deputy director at the Alfred Hospital. He's been a FASM for 5 years, and when not at work, he enjoys cooking and navigating how to look after his 8-month-old daughter. We're also joined by Lauren Wayland, who's a HR business partner at Alfred Health, working in emergency and acute medicine programs. In addition to that, she's a registered nurse and has a degree in nursing and clinical leadership. She's had a lot of experience working at a number of organisations, varying in size and sector, both in Melbourne and London. And when Lauren isn't working, she enjoys going out for dinner with friends or sneaking in a few episodes on Netflix. So thanks for joining us, guys, and look forward to having a chat about how we should write our consultant CVs and what interviews are going to look like and things like that.
Awesome. Thanks.
Thanks, Laura.
So I might start with asking maybe Andy, when do you think that as sort of the senior trainee and heading into consultant life, we should start to write our CVs for this?
Yeah, thanks, Laura. Look, I think my recommendation is that I think we, as emergency physicians and emergency trainees, it's important to keep your CV updated. Really, you should be looking at it, you know, every 1 to 2 months. It's not uncommon for to be in situations where a job application comes up unexpectedly. And as doctors, we underappreciate how much time it actually takes to get a CV prepared. So I strongly recommend people keep it updated.
Yeah, cool. And what sort of things should it include? I guess similar to probably what, you know, updating it all the way along, but, you know, obviously backtracking to school and things, it can, you know, be fairly long. You know, what sort of things do you think it should include? And Lauren might ask you next as well, what sort of things you look for?
So I think really, look, you think you see CV as being a bit like a shop window. And there is a part of it that involves selling yourself. And a lot of doctors aren't particularly good at doing that. And they tend to have their CVs that they can read a bit like a directory of factual information rather than the actual data that sells itself. Ultimately, broad headings, principles, it should be tailored to the job you're applying for and should be relevant to the institution you're applying for. And sometimes people miss the mark on that. I think it's important to, you know, ensure you have jobs you've worked at. It should address any gaps in training that you've might have had. I think it's important to highlight things like educational involvement that you would have had. It's important to have things involved in quality improvement projects, research and academic programs that you might have been involved in. And I think it's also worthwhile putting in some extracurricular activities that you participate in, because it does reflect on, you know, having interest outside emergency medicine is a good thing. And I think, you know, perspective employers will look to ensure that someone isn't at high risk of burnout, and will look favourably on somebody who's got interest outside work. Having said that as well, I think it's important to avoid stuff that isn't relevant to the job you're applying for.
Yeah, and is that sort of going back to maybe school and things? Is it, you know, should we be sort of just including from university onwards, or?
Look, I think it's, to my mind, I think it's reasonable to say your university degree. I think it's make sure you've got the your qualification and all those things recorded. I personally don't have my school recorded on, and I don't have my A levels or whatever, you know,
the Australian equivalent is.
your job for an emergency physician.
Yeah. And Lauren, what about you? What sort of things do you look for on it?
Yeah, I have to agree with Andy with everything that he said. I think it is really important that you detail your CV to the position that you're applying for. A lot of people just think that they can use the same CV for every position. But what we find is that when you actually adjust your CV to reflect the position that you're applying for, you're more likely to get shortlisted potentially, and it grabs the attention of the recruiting manager or the people recruiting for that position. I think also as well, it's really important for the CV to be succinct. It really shouldn't be any more than 2 pages. You know, obviously if you've had a lot more experience, you'd push to maybe 3, but that would be it. I think it's also important that, you know, it's a good opportunity to highlight your strengths and, you know, if you have any sort of awards or you've been involved in anything, you know, any particular projects that would align nicely to the position that you're applying for, I think that's really important to put in as well.
Okay. And I guess a little bit in the introduction, like just so sort of, you know, your heading of sort of your name and, you know, I guess they've moved away from putting sort of date of birth on and, but other things, sort of the admin kind of things to include. Is there anything specific there that we should avoid doing?
You just really need your name, address, email, phone number. It should be logical and well organized. That's a really good point. I agree with Andy. I don't believe you need to put in your high school. From your degree onwards is fine. And it just really needs to be succinct, obviously, with your experience of work, putting in timelines and things like that. The most recent one at the top is also a good thing to do.
And I guess anything, you know, obviously the content is important, but, you know, obviously it's got to be attractive to the employer's eyes so that they actually want to read it. Any tips or, you know, things that you look for, like when you're looking at through CVs, and anything that you just think is, you know, we just should avoid doing?
I think it's really important to be mindful that when people are applying for positions and recruiters are applying, you know, looking at those applications, you know, potentially we can be looking at hundreds. So I would really say that it needs to be clean, as I said, logical, well organized, and no waffle. You don't need to go on about with a lot of detail. Just be succinct in the information that you're providing, so it's easy to read, and that the person looking at your CV can really sort of target from what they've put up in the position that they're looking for, that they can match to what's in the CV. That's probably the biggest thing.
Yeah, so I think just to augment what Lauren was saying, you know, there's a couple of things that to be wary about in terms of, you know, email address, just to ensure that it's a professional email address. You don't need it to be anything that's, you know, controversial or risky. Just have it as a professional email address with your name and who you are. It doesn't need to be something that's kind of looks childish or, you know, teen-like. Sometimes people forget that because they've had an email they've had for 15, 20 years and it just doesn't reflect well in terms of professionalism. A lot of people now will put a photograph in on their CV, and I think that's completely okay. But again, I think, you know, I think I'd play it conservative and have a professional photograph as opposed to something that might attract controversy. I'd avoid, you know, putting in social media handles on your the top of your contact details. I think that's attracting attention that may not necessarily be good attention. And I think, as Lauren said, I think you want it to be succinct, bullet point, to the point. I think, you know, there's no need to go into verbose detail, you know, in terms of what you did in your internship, for example, because you're now applying for a consultant post. I think that it's completely irrelevant at this point.
Yeah, and I was going to say, I guess we've touched on a few things, but just to summarise perhaps the specific differences for a consultant CV, perhaps to our previous ones, you know, intern and resident registrar level. I think you've sort of said, you know, making it tailored to the specific position that you're applying for, you know, keeping it succinct and covering sort of the main points that you've done, because I guess they'll be talked about in interview if they want to know more. I think 2 pages is really hard. I better go work on mine.
I would certainly say that mine is longer than 2 pages. Maybe it's just the font, I don't know. you know, I think it's challenging if you've got, you know, publications, et cetera, that you want to have on your CV, then, you know, it is potential for somebody who's very experienced in it, or has a PhD, for example, that they may well have longer CVs. But it should be relevant.
I'll just add one point to that. If you do have a longer CV, just put the most important stuff up the front. When people are going through CVs and it's a long one, you want to make sure that that they capture the most important things first.
Thank you. And I guess the last section usually is sort of your referees. Who do you reckon you should ask, Andy, you know, to sort of, or what you look for in a referee, you know, for people who are applying for jobs? How many should we have? And you know, what sort of things look favourably when the employers are sort of checking them?
I think probably most will look at a consultant post, you're looking for 3, if not 4. Depending on the requirements of the organization you're applying for. You know, I think it's important, you know, where possible, that you have a current employer as you know, or director as being one of your referees. I think it, to me, would may pop up as a red flag if somebody had applied for a job and their referees are from, you know, 18 months to 2 years ago and nothing in the last 2 years. Sometimes, and I say that, you know, carefully, because I think sometimes it might be a situation where someone's applying for a job and at the time applying for the job may not want to highlight to their current employer that they're applying to an external employer. And there's ways around that. You know, you can speak to the HR team in terms of, you know, references being on request if, you know, successful at the interview. I think it's very reasonable for a trainee to have their DEMT as being one of your referees. I think would be augment well in terms of someone who can vouch for your professional qualification and for your training. And I think then, you know, somebody maybe, you know, who's been close to maybe successful projects you've been involved in, I think is a good idea. Someone has a really who can speak for how well you've performed as a trainee in clinical projects.
Yeah. So I guess someone who knows you isn't just that can.
Yeah, I'd strongly recommend not having somebody who doesn't know you, because it's more likely that you'll have a more, you know, generic reference.
Yeah.
And I think the other thing as well on that, Laura, is just to make sure you speak to your referees before putting them down. I think sometimes those people may not necessarily do that, but I think it shows professionalism. It puts in the mind of the referee that you are applying for this job, and you know that you'd like them to be available for a phone call, or you might get emailed, because often your referees are very busy people too, and it's just important that, you know, it's in their minds that they may well have to provide a referee for you in the near future.
Sure. And have you, I don't know if you've been a referee before, Andy, but what does it involve? Because I guess we don't really know that at this site, having not really been one before, we ask people.
So look, I think it depends. Different organisations and different institutions have different ways of doing it. Certainly, I think to look at, you know, how long have you known the applicant for would be one of the typical question. You know, in what capacity do they work for you? People probably ask about their professionalism and technical abilities. Certainly, there'll be much significant focus, and certainly our focus when I look to speak to referees, is on somebody's ability to work in a team and to fit in. I think that's really important. Whether they'd hire that person again. And I think that'll be questions certainly that we would ask.
And is it usually written or like over the phone or?
So it'd be a combination. Most organisations will have a combination.
So it is a fair bit of work for the referee. So I guess when you're choosing, definitely speaking to them and giving them a heads up is, you know, is key. Because I guess you just sort of think, oh yeah, I'll get a referee. But actually, you know, there is a bit of work involved with that.
Absolutely, Laura. And you know, as well, if someone is ready for a call, because often there will be a verbal reference that needs to be arranged. It's always tricky when you're in the middle of a clinical shift and you get a cold call from another organization asking for you to be a referee for somebody, and nobody had even spoken to you about it, or you didn't even know they were leaving your organization, for example. It doesn't really, it may come out in the what your next words are about.
Yeah, perhaps. A little bit awkward. Lauren, anything to add or?
Yeah, I just would say that make sure, depending on what the position in the health service, that you make sure you give them the references that they require. I have noticed in the past that different health services require different types of references. So you might just want to double check what is actually being requested of you rather than just putting in, certain references. Just double check that, because it can be important.
No worries, thank you. Well, I think that sort of covers the CV stuff that I wanted to talk about. Obviously, it's, you know, it's difficult on a podcast forum, but what we're going to do is at the workshop days, we've got a day where people can bring their CVs along and we can have a look at them and sort of critique them and suggest any improvements. So this is sort of just an introduction to that. And I think probably what we can do now is move on to just having a bit of a chat about what the interview process looks like and, you know, and the things involved in that. So I guess you've written your CV, you've applied for the job, you've been called to interview. What sort of happens? How are the interviews conducted and what should we expect?
So I think in terms of interviews, there is a little bit of a dance with it. And I think the first thing I think for an interview is you need to prepare. It's something you can prepare well for. So I think we talked about the CV. I think it's important you know your CV well and you have a really good idea of what you've achieved, because someone might ask you about something on your CV. So it's important that you can recall all those things on your CV. There's a lot of, you know, there's potential, there's typical questions that will be asked in interviews. And, you know, often there's a lot of preparation you can do for that in terms of, you know, having, you know, prepared answers for those kind of questions and ways you can modify them if it's slightly different when those questions are asked. I think the simple things you should acknowledge when it comes to an interview to make sure you know where it's happening, what time it's happening, making sure that you're professionally dressed, making sure that you have your timeline ready, knowing when the interview time, where it's going to be on. You want to be punctual. You don't want to be too stressed about things like that. Consideration about, you know, how you're going to get to the interview. Are you going to drive? Is someone going to drive you? Are you going to get, you know, public transport? Are you going to get, you know, ride share or taxi, or how you're actually going to get there? Sometimes I've certain interviews I've gone to, I've got an Uber, I've gone upgraded myself to a Comfort Uber and used that time to have my CV out in front of me and questions I've prepared to have them ready and just have a read through. I think it's important to kind of factor in, you know, that you've got your professional dress or suit that you're going to attend the interview ready. You know, it fits you. And that's something you haven't tried on in six months and you find it changed for you. That's not the good idea. Not the great idea to find that out an hour before the interview that the clothes you're about to wear don't fit. but those sound, it sounds like a joking thing, but actually those things are really important and things you don't need to stress about in the morning. So having all those things prepared is important. You know, if you've got children, et cetera, who's going to look after them that morning and all those kind of things is important as well. I think, you know, arriving on time, you know, feeling good about yourself that morning is always a good thing. One thing I recommend is maybe to go get some exercise on the day you're doing an interview so you can just feel really fresh when you arrive at the interview. Make sure you've had a good night's sleep the night before. All those things sound trivial, but they're really important because I think one of the first things people have not met you before, if you walk into that room, there's a lot of things in terms of your body language, how you look actually does have subconscious people will start to judge you the minute you walk in the door. I think those things are important.
A bit like another OSCE, really, hey?
Yeah, I think, you know, they're all different things, but I think, impressions count.
Yeah, definitely.
And, you know, people are looking for somebody who's got that, you know, the behaviours and professionalism that's going to be somebody who's going to provide leadership and management in their organisation, then I think you're going to be held to a pretty high standard.
Yeah, absolutely. And how long do the interviews tend to last for? Is there a set thing or does it just depend on how it's going?
So I've had short interviews and they've been okay. I've had longer interviews. The longest one interview I've done, I think it was a 30 or 40 minutes. Maybe it was 30 minutes, Laura.
Sure.
I think generally, I think everybody's pretty much wrapped up after that. And I think, you know, reality is there's logistics of running interviews.
Yes.
Your prospective employers, their time's important. They may have other people they're interviewing that day. They most likely will. You know, they want to be able to get through those interviews pretty sharply and assess. So they're really focused for that 30 minutes.
And Lauren, what do you reckon? Anything else to add?
Yeah, I think Andy's covered it well. Again, I would reiterate, just make sure you're well presented. Make sure you know where you're going. And I would get there a little bit early just so you can make sure you know where you're going and that you can just sort of take some time to breathe before you go in, just to reflect on, you know, the discussions and the examples maybe that you'll have in mind. And, you know, first impressions do really count. So just take the time to settle yourself before you go into the interview. And also it's a good idea when the interviewer asks you questions, just take a moment to collect yourself before you answer so you know what you're going to say before it comes out of your mouth.
Thanks. And how many people tend to be on the panel? Does it vary? Obviously, I'm sure it varies between organisation, but, you know, do you get told maybe who's going to be on the panel before the interview? Is that something you should be asking or what do you reckon to that?
Usually you will know. You can find out who's going to be on the interview panel. And I think it's street smart, Laura, to know who those people are. And I think, you know, you'll usually invariably have somebody from the, you know, if it's an emergency job you're applying for, there'll be someone, like the director of the emergency department will be present. There'll often be a clinical colleague of that director, might be deputy director or something like that. Someone who's kind of assessing whether that person's going to be able to fit into the team. Invariably, you'll have someone from a kind of an operational or executive from the hospital at the interview. And you'll also have most likely, and you know, always will have someone from HR at your interview. And it's important if you know who those people are, and then you can anticipate the kind of questions they're going to ask based on where they're coming from.
Yeah, and what sort of questions? You know, obviously, you'll cover the CV and, you know, a bit about the person, but are there any other sort of categories of questions, I guess, that you usually tend to get asked that we should be prepared for?
Yeah, so there's things you can probably anticipate in terms of, you know, who is on the interview panel. So they're going to be looking for things that highlight your leadership and management. I think there's always going to be questions where you should be able to articulate and illustrate ability for self-reflection and ability to work in a team. So things are important. I mean, people always want to know why you want to work with them, why you should be hired. They may ask you to, certainly a question that was a curveball for me was asking me how my boss would describe me. So I think that that was a challenging question. But we got through it and that was okay. But those kind of questions that, you know, do expect you to show some sort of self-reflection. It's not uncommon. I've been asked about extracurricular activities during an interview. So it's important to be prepared for those things. And certainly I've been involved in interviews at the interview side where we've asked questions and people and there's been silence when we've asked about extracurricular activities. So then I know that can be really awkward for everybody.
I guess potentially because we're in that post-exam period as well, you know, at times maybe there hasn't actually been a lot of extra fun curricular activities, but I get it, you know, it is important and hopefully, you know, there has been what, you know, is that stress leave because obviously it's busy and you want to know, like you said, that people, you know, have outlets that are going to help reduce burnout and all the rest of it. So yeah, and also bring a bit of diversity and personality to the team.
And people will want to know how you're going to fit into the team, what you're going to bring, what strengths are you going to have? So I think that's, you know, the questions are going to be flavored in that direction to show what you're actually going to bring. Well, like why do we need this person additionally in our department?
Yeah. And Lauren, what sort of things would you ask or be interested in from a HR perspective?
Yeah, I guess from my perspective, you know, the candidates that I see to be successful would be, you know, well-rounded with strong, you know, technical and communication skills. But it's also about making sure that they will fit into the organisational culture, into the team specifically. So that's why it's really important to, you know, have answers to, you know, things you do outside of work. But not only that, being aware of your own strengths and development areas so we can understand how you can fit into the team, but also how we can sort of work and develop you going forward as well.
Yeah, great. And are there any things that you think that candidates should sort of know about their prospective employers that we should be doing before the interview? Or, you know, I guess there's things like the values of the hospital and the organisation and things like that, that, you know, most hospitals have. You know, is there anything, you know, I guess people can come for tours around the department and have a look at, you know, their prospective places of work. Is there anything else that you think, you know, you would recommend to people going for interview at a certain place?
I think it's a great idea to do your homework about the organisation that you're applying for and particularly the department as well. I think it shows and demonstrates how keen you are to work for the organisation, and it also provides you an understanding and will help you ask questions to your interviewers about, you know, what they're dealing with, whether there's any challenges, you know, what are things that they should be mindful for if they, you know, are, you know, offered the position. It just gives you a good grounding to go into your interview.
I think one of the things always at the end is, you know, what should you ask at the end? Obviously you want to be keen and interested, but sometimes I guess, you know, you've kind of done your homework and you know what you're looking for. And, you know, can kind of feel a little bit not necessarily authentic. Is there anything that, you know, you think it's good for potential employees to ask at the end that they, you know, is a good thing to reflect on the organisation that they're applying to?
I think from my perspective, although organisations are interviewing sort of candidates for positions, it also has to be a right fit the other way around. You know, so I always think it's good to ask about, you know, what's the team environment that I'll be going into? You know, are there any challenges, you know, within the team or depending obviously the position that you're applying for, so you can get a sense whether you feel that you would also fit into the position and the organisation. I think it's important both ways.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And look, Andy?
Yeah, just I think, just touching on what Lauren said, you know, I think a lot of organizations will have a strategic plan for the next, you know, 3, sometimes 5 years. And that's usually something that's accessible externally. And it's a useful template and questions comes across as, it, you know, if you have read the strategic plan, you can hone some questions, particularly if, you know, if someone's building a new emergency department, you can ask about that, opportunities that might arise in that context. If there's other, you know, projects or research that are happening within the department. And I think to me, as an interviewer or somebody who's looking at a candidate, I think that shows it reflects good preparation, it reflects enthusiasm. So I think it's a really good idea to just understand what the direction of the hospital is and what challenges they're encountering at the moment.
Yeah, I would agree.
And I guess after the interview, sort of, you know, how long roughly, obviously everybody place will be different, but, you know, roughly how long does it take for people to hear? And is it a phone call or how is it usually done after interview, whether you've been successful or unsuccessful?
So I've had interviews where I've been phoned straight afterwards. And that was good. And certainly there's been ones where I've waited a few days. And I think for most organisations, it shouldn't take longer than a week, really. I think if you're waiting beyond a week at consultant level, and that's been my experience, it really depends, I guess. You know, it does depend on how many people are applying.
Yes.
For the job, because there might be other interview rounds that are happening.
Yes.
A week later, or, you know, a few days later. So just, you just need to keep those things in mind. But certainly my experience has been the you know, successful and unsuccessful have been phone calls.
Also, I'd add to that, you know, sometimes it does take time to get a hold of referees and things like that, which can hold up the process, which is, you know, as Andy said, it's really good to just give your referees a heads up that they should be expecting a call or an email, so we can get that process done quickly as well.
And I guess any final comments on the interviews, anything that I haven't asked that you think we should know about?
So there's people talk about things you shouldn't bring up in an interview.
Any no-nos?
Yeah, so I think it's always tricky. But I think this thing, look, I think if you play safe in an interview, it's not about bragging. I think you want to demonstrate your positive attributes and experience. I think things you avoid controversy. I think it's not a time to be making controversial political comments or certain maybe kind of, you know, hospital politics or something like that. I think it's probably not the time to bring you up in an interview. It's to be surprised once people have a run of anxiety or adrenaline, not dissimilar to on a football field. Sometimes people can do some interesting things. I'd probably recommend avoiding discussion of salary and leave entitlements at the time of interview. I think it's not that those questions aren't important and relevant. They're probably just not relevant to an interview because that's not what you're really there for at that point. So I think those things like that I'd be avoiding.
I think it's a really good point. If you're asked why you left your previous employer, you know, don't go into, you know, the details, particularly if it's a negative, you know, reason as to why you left. That's probably the biggest one. You know, you don't want to bring any negativity or anything like that into the interview. There are times when things don't work out and that's fine. But just, you know, you don't have to be too detailed about things like that. So just, yeah, be quite sort of brief, I guess, in terms of that, but, you know, really try and stay positive in the interview.
Awesome. Well, I think that sort of covers the interview process and how it sort of works. And again, at the workshop day that we'll be doing along with the CV, there'll be an opportunity to discuss this in a bit more detail and potentially have some practices at answering the questions. So I think that probably closes the podcast today. Thanks very much for giving up your time today. And I think it's just given us a really good summary and some things to think about. And yeah, I guess I'll go get started on working on mine.
Great. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Awesome. Thanks, everyone.